Are you ready to cultivate confident, resilient, and mentally strong dancers? Introducing Lauren Ritchie's Mental Skills Masterclasses, designed to build dancers from the inside out. Join them live and online for a transformative journey where each month, dancers will dive deep into a different mental skill, including confidence, growth mindset, motivation, resilience, and stress regulation. In these engaging one-hour sessions, you will learn, reflect, and practice personalized mental skills, exercises, and techniques that you can immediately apply to your training, performances, and everyday life. This program is perfect for dancers age 12 and above who are committed to growth, curiosity, and community. Dancers can log on individually or as dance teams. And don't worry if the live classes don't align with your schedule, as sessions will be recorded and available online for viewing at your convenience. Visit www.withlauren.ca or follow the link below for more details and grab your information package today.
Sometimes, you know, we get stuck, just like right now, you know, you could feel that I'm sort of tongue-tied all of a sudden, as if like I have to provide you some kind of answer. I don't speak that way. Yeah. You know, I would rather chat on, you know, and try to elaborate through things.
Hello and welcome to The Background Dancer. I'm your host, Jason Yup. Thank you for joining me with our community of passionate dance contributors from around the world and across different fields. In this weekly podcast, I offer educational conversations and insightful tips to help you better understand all things offstage about this curious art form. For this episode, I speak to Ho Ying Feng, theatre director, playwright, designer, and producer, and we talk about the crossover between theatre and dance. Hello, Ho Ying Feng. I just want to say a huge, huge welcome to The Background Dancer. It's been such a long time since we've talked, met, or interacted at any level. So I am so delighted to have you on this platform. We're going to have a great conversation today, I'm sure.
Well, I must say, you know, I hate radio interviewing. I hate podcasting. You know, when everything is all of a sudden, you know, getting so rigid and straight, you know, I can't talk and I can't speak, you know. But it's wonderful seeing you again.
Today we're going to talk a little bit about one of my most favorite classes, I think, when I was studying at the HKAPA. I've mentioned HKAPA a lot of times already throughout my journey as a podcaster, because I think that was really a life changer, a game changer for me, the institution and all the classes and all the journeys that I've experienced at that institution. And it was not all great, but it was definitely a great lesson for me. You know, it really changed the way I saw art, but also life in general. Yeah. So one of the best parts about that journey was your class, Modern Western Theatre, which I took as an elective, I think in year three. It was really funny because I was the only dancer in that entire class, and everyone was, you know, there were actors, there were, you know, potential dramaturgs and script writers, everyone. And it felt weird because I always thought that I was speaking a different language to them. But at some level, I know that we were all connected. And it was also like half English, half Cantonese. So you were very nice because you also allowed me to speak a bit more English at the time when my Cantonese wasn't so good. But today we're going to talk about that, the crossover between dance and theater, which I think is so much more closely related than a lot of people take for. So just to start everything off, what do you think is a crossover between dance and theater, if there is any at all?
Well, honestly, you know, I don't believe that word. You know, I mean, life itself is all about crossover. I think in the 20th century, you know, when we try to design so-called education, institutionalized, you know, I mean, and try to dissect knowledge into different fields, specific fields, and that's a big problem there. To me, it's dance and drama, painting, all kind of art form are basically integrated. you know, it's about the connectivity of a human being, you know, with the people, the things, and the environment around us. So we are choosing different kind of platform. Dance is a platform. It's strange, you know, I mean, like DVA, they call it dance theater, right? So, I mean, in their work, it's not just about dance. It's not just about theater. It's about the connectivity on very specific issue they find disturbing. So I think it's sort of strange and absurd, you know, when an institution tried to have different kind of departments specializing, you know, different fields. And that's a big problem for students, I think. I think in the course of learning, we should be able to incorporate all disciplines and try to seek the kind of communication that fundamentally important to everything. Only then you could really connect with the self from within and learn to develop a specific language of your own. So through dance, it's not just about speech, right? A lot of dancers would hate to speak. Who said a dancer can speak, right? He speaks through the body. I think a dancer is a poet, right? You write through your body, right? And an actor, a performer, they rely so much on speech. And I think sometimes, you know, the best moment is silence.
Yeah.
So I think it's highly problematic nowadays, you know, when we try to keep thinking about crossing disciplines.
Yeah.
In real life, you name it, right? When you wake up, even in your sleep, you know, you dream through different kind of disciplines, media, you know, and the paths you walked on. And they are all interweaving with one another. So, I mean, to me, it never happened, you know, whether if you're a dance student or a music student or drama student. To me, is this sort of, I understand, you know, the background of it. But yet, I must say, you know, I don't think that way.
That's a great start to the conversation indeed. You know, like one of the things that I have come across in my education is somewhat like a whole new category of interdisciplinary arts, right? This is like probably the trendiest thing going on right now, or even in the past 5 years, where it's as if they had to redefine how integrating different art forms can become its own genre. So one of my favorite phrases about art is all art is interdisciplinary, all art is visual, right? Like, and you know, when you call visual arts the visual arts, why is it the visual arts when, you know, I have to have my eyesight to also watch dance or theater? You know, it's everything is visual. Like, and likewise, all art is interdisciplinary. Like, even from the classical ages of ballet, let's say, it was interdisciplinary already. So why are people recreating these kinds of phrases, or like you said, you know, coining different terms in order to, maybe, I guess we all know why, you know, just sort of recreating markets, you know, to further, you know, different types of interests. So one of the things I think I would also like to ask you is, if you say there is no like crossover between, you know, a specific crossover, because everything is already, you know, crossed, is there a way that you can also define a difference between maybe dance and theater, apart from the obvious, which is one is movement and one is more text-based?
Well, you're touching another sensitive area. You know, I hate defining things. Just like Walter Benjamin keeps saying, you know, it's the tricks of naming. You know, I mean, behind naming, we will fall into traps, mental traps, psychological traps. And then it stops us from really connecting with one another. I mean, just like, it's not just about visual. It's audio, visual, spatial, right? They all work together. They never separate. So when I work with a dancer, you know, I work with a lot of dancers nowadays, you know, more often than working with so-called performer actors, you know, in theater. It's not that I try to avoid theater, you know, actors. And I think there is a problem nowadays, you know, when a lot of the art students, you know, are being preconditioned to specific fields, then all of a sudden their mindset, you know, would be blocked. As if they are looking for some very specific crafts, skills, you know, to not even, they don't even touch the word contemplate. maybe that's too difficult a word, you know, but I think it's something so fundamental. I mean, as an artist, it's not really someone special in a way. I think everyone is an artist in a way, deep down. To me, art is simply a platform, a state of being that to allow us to flow, to dive in to very specific spectrum of living that all of a sudden you could perceive at times or particular space and time, right? And I think everybody does have that kind of sensitivity. But because of institution, we tend to try to separate people from one another and saying, hey, you're an artist. Hey, you are a craftsman, you know. It calls for art as well, you know, for a craftsman. Yeah. He or she would need the specific sensitivity with the fingers, with the hands, with the heart, and how to connect to the state of being, right? Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't try to separate that and define, you know, what a dancer should be. And I think DVA did something very nicely, you know, when they tried to integrate. Even Pina Bausch did the same thing. Who said a dancer could dance? Who said somebody in the street can dance? Mm. Right? If they could be honest with themselves, they get a sense of movement from within, and they start walking. And it's that sensitivity, you know, to life around us. We begin to discover some kind of pleasure in movements, right? Yeah. Even our speech as well. But sometimes, you know, we get stuck, just like right now, you know, you could feel that I'm sort of tongue-tied all of a sudden, as if like I have to provide you some kind of answer. I don't speak that way. Yeah. You know, I would rather chat on, you know, and try to elaborate through things. It's almost like using the speech to paint, you know. So I'm trying to paint a sort of a tapestry of living through words, through pauses.
On top of being a terrific coach and person, Lauren Ritchie's online resources will leave you with more than you can hope for, as you'll find a treasure trove of insightful materials to elevate your dance journey. Explore thought-provoking blogs packed with tips, techniques, and personal insights from Lauren herself, covering everything from mastering mindset to overcoming performance anxiety. Plus, discover hand-picked books and podcast recommendations to expand your knowledge and inspire your growth as a dancer, educator, or leader in the dance community. Dive in today and let her know which was your favorite. You know, even just hearing you right now, like your speech is poetic as naturally as can be. And that is from a third person point of view or a second person point of view listening to this. And despite all of your points so far with regards to dance and theater, one thing that still piques my interest, and I think, you know, with regards to institution and education, it is very great to, it's wonderful to be able to talk about this at this point in life. But for example, if you turn the clock back, you know, maybe when you were my age and we had literally no idea as to how these things can liquefy with one another, right? So therefore, we had to maybe select a particular path to go into. It's just easier, just more convenient. It's more economical, for example, for your parents or whoever to fund you. Why go into something that you probably cannot explain quite clearly? Go into something that is much more defined. So the one thing that always piques my interest is, among the many things, I'm pretty sure there was one thing that drew you to theater. Yeah, like what drew me to dance? I could have been a singer, an instrumentalist, a violinist, an actor, a circus artist, whatever. But there was something about dance that really pulled me in. And I can tell you for days what that is. I'm more interested to know what was it for you with regards to theater.
Well, I got into movies to start with. You know, I was just too poor, you know, to invest myself in filmmaking. Because back in those days, you know, you have to buy film. And editing and everything was so expensive. It's not like right now, you know, everybody can edit, you know, and you could be a YouTuber. It wasn't that luxurious back then. But what I realized, you know, my interest wasn't at all in movies. It's through movies I get a chance, the opportunity to peek into humanity, you know. So my concern was human stories. It wasn't really movies in a way. And then one day, all of a sudden, you know, because I couldn't stand, you know, I mean, getting into the film department, what they were teaching was something so technical and so expensive. And I wasn't interested. You know, I really got into film when I was in high school, watching films that I didn't understand. And I think not understanding was a good thing to me back then, because it worked with my curiosity. The vast territories out there, you know, for me to research on, you know, to look forward to. So one day, all of a sudden, I got into theater, and I sit there. I said, "Oh, I realize I don't need anything. I just only need me being there." So when I get into that space, somebody would say, "Hey, this is a black box. It's almost like a place where a lot of things buried for, you know, there. You know, you can unknot those coats of living, you know, through performances." So I was intrigued by those possibilities because it was cheap, it was inexpensive, and it connected so directly as far as my state of being back then, you know, because I grew up in very, very complicated background. And all of a sudden, I was suffering from indigestion. Why people behave in certain way? Why the living phenomenon was being profiled in such manner in newspaper, in the media? But in reality, they're not really that. So when I'm in theater, I could really sit down and contemplate with all those experiences. So when I work with actors, I don't work with actors. I work with people. I connect with them. I don't ask them to perform for me. I would say, why do they have to move, to speak, to perform in front of an audience? They must have something very, very specific that they want to share, want to investigate, want to pose questions over specific issues. So I just enjoy that process, I guess.
All right. Well, that's good enough for me, at least. You know, I think it takes the most nuanced aspects, really, right? The small things that make a huge difference as to why you would choose something over another thing. And it's really funny that you mentioned black box, because when I first came across this term, it sounded quite apocalyptic to me. So why would you call a theater a black box? It's almost like a black hole, you know? And then I could not even differentiate what a proscenium stage and a black box was. And I found myself throughout the 12 years of being in the performing arts, I have been living, air quotes, in the black box more often than I have in a proscenium theater, let's say, you know? And that's what the black box is really about, right? It brings something much more intimate, much more refined in that sense, much more nuanced. And I like that kind of work. But before we get into that, because that is so interesting as well with how you want to work with people. And that really brings, you know, it opens so many more cans of worms in terms of my interest. But before that, let's talk a little bit about, once again, I want to drill into this. Like, we go into education, yeah? And despite all the flaws of education that we can talk about for days, there is one very fundamental aspect of it that I think is still necessary, and that is honing your skills, right? The fundamental skills of any art form. So for me, as a dancer, simple things like classical ballet or, you know, performativity, showmanship, confidence, a bunch of other things that dancers are known to do. So I think it's still important, but do you think skill will also help us reach that level of, like you right now, not giving too much of an emphasis of what definition means anymore? You need to start from somewhere, and I think you need to start from having the skill first, the basics.
Yes and no.
Tell me why.
Because I think, you know, when we institutionalize, you know, certain fields through specific courses and classes, we tend to deduce, you know, or abstract things out of reality and tell people that, hey, you should first learn this, otherwise you won't be able to do step two and step three. And I think the world from within doesn't work that way. I think it's about care and concern and sensitivity you build in life. And it's the observation of the other and of the self in the making. It's through that kind of observation and needs to be, it open people's up, you know, open them up. Yeah. And they would begin to be very sensitive about things. And I think the so-called skill is about the depth of observation and a need to convey, to communicate. So if we could transcend those very rigid form of skill training, crafts training, into living possibility day in and day out, and I think the whole perception of skill will be changing. But because, like you said, we need to market certain things, and we would design classes, say, hey, this is a particular class on crafts, you know. That's right. And I think that's the problem of so-called education, contemporary education. I try to cut that off, go back to game, go back to playing, go back to discovery. And then the game would be on, you know, and the skill would eventually be developed in its totality, not being separated from thought, from feelings, you know.
Hey everyone, if you're like me and prioritize online privacy and security, you're going to love NordVPN. Not only does NordVPN safeguard your internet connection and protect your personal data from hackers and snoopers, but it also offers an amazing advantage: seamless access to geo-blocked content on platforms like Netflix. With NordVPN, you can browse the web with peace of mind and enjoy your favorite shows and movies from anywhere in the world. Plus, their user-friendly interface makes it easy for anyone to stay protected online. And here's the best part. NordVPN offers a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you can try it risk-free. Trust me, I've been using this for 2 years now, and it has totally changed my life. What's more, you can get the basic plan for as low as $5 a month. By signing up through the referral link below, you not only support your online peace of mind, but also help me and the continuity of this show. So, sign up for NordVPN today and let's serve smarter and safer together. I'm speaking to Ho Yingfeng, founder and director of Hobbit Gun, a cultural hub for arts and body and mind centering, which focus on the research and practice on applied theatre and arts for education and cultural studies. Hey, Jason here with a special message for you to help and continue serving our beloved performing arts community. So here's what you can do. Share this with one person you believe who this episode can benefit and attach a personal note explaining why. This way, you are not only helping me grow this show, but also adding value to those you truly care about. Massive appreciation, as it means the world to me. And let's get right back to the show. Well, I can speak for myself for sure, because I started dance at 16, which is very late, traditionally speaking, for dancers who don't have a very long lifespan as a functioning, skilled body, let's say. And there were a lot of moments in my life where I go back to the training or a particular context and I go, wow, this is easy. But how? Oh, I remember. It's because I did not learn it from zero, from day one. I skipped the process. I was curious before others were, and I picked it up before everyone else did. And that really served the understanding, the depth of understanding, let's say, with regards to how I applied those skills or knowledge. And that really helped me, let's say, catch up to a lot of the younger dancers in terms of being able to apply myself in the work of art, because it's very complicated, like you said, you know, and anything that you just mentioned, the sensibility, the sensitivity, the awareness. I really hope, and I know that there are education models right now that are, let's say, designing that setting in that way, redefining what skills can be. But in the most traditional sense, once again, like point your feet for a dancer is the most basic term, is the most achievable goal, let's say. It's hard to create a metric for sensitivity at this point. Hopefully in the future we can. But point your feet, for sure, that gives you one mark and then gives you like a pass point, right? So let's talk a little bit about the people that you work with, because I am still quite unsure whether you audition people. Yeah, do you audition people first? And if you don't, like, how do you then select the best people to work with if you have not worked with them before?
No, that's another area, you know, I often have problems with. I hate auditioning.
Yeah.
And I don't believe in getting the best people. You just learn to accept. In our society, you know, we tend to try, you know, to work with the best, you know, and that's something very capitalistic thinking. You know, to try to suit for maximum profit, you know, like, I think in reality, you know, you encounter people from all levels or all walks of life. I think it's the biggest challenge of all is to try to incorporate those differences. And that's so real. And I think that should be the kind of philosophy that we should be embraced, learn to embrace. It's not trying to get the best image. It's trying to incorporate alternative possibilities through layers of images, you know, conveyed through different human beings. So when I work with people, I did experience audition before, but I hate experience, you know. I mean, people will get disappointed, and some people will say, hey, I'm special because I'm better. I think that's not true, right? Of course, you know, if I direct a play, you know, there are only four characters, of course. I can only choose four, right? I would often, you know, work with a group. Let's say if there are 30 performers coming to for auditioning, I said I work with them for 3 hours. If they don't get a role, it doesn't mean that they lose. At least they gain 3 hours of experiences. And that's my way, you know, to audition in a way. And also I have to work with them as well. I mean, through different layers. I mean, if they don't perform, I mean, they could work with me through design, through a sort of think tank, or they're all possibility incorporated to work with people. I'm not trying to make people happy, but I think we have to learn to treat the world, you know, in a better way, not by who's better and who's worse, but by, say, I think everyone's, you know, could contribute to an event if we are willing to work with one another. That's why I often, you know, mix community, art, specific issues, all kind of things together. You know, I mean, they take shapes every day. But somehow, you know, it's almost like writing a book, you know. I mean, the best things about reading is it's not trying to get answers from the writer. It's to try to imagine when a person willing to sit down to contemplate with the experiences therein and transcend that into images through words, phrases, paragraphs. That state of being is fascinating. You know, I try to connect that state of being rather than the material that they're trying to convey through words. Likewise, in theater, when I work with performers, actors, dancers, musicians, I enjoy watching who they are and how they connect with the self. And that's my first observation. Such honesty would be very, very essential. So they may not be the best skill-wise, but they could be very inspiring. Yeah. Out of certain rusty way, you know, to use words or the fingers or whatever, they could be charming too. So yeah, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not giving you answers, but
it's really great. Can I throw you a controversial take?
Yeah.
Like, since we're going there already. Yeah.
Sure.
So I have had a slight problem with for me, it's like a trend. A better way to put it is a fetishization.
Mm.
Yeah. And I know you know what I'm talking when I mention this. So, okay. First of all, to your point, I totally agree with the fact that it really comes down to the creator. So you being of such capacity to care, to love, and to facilitate a mutually beneficial relationship, and not just a relationship, but a setting, a learning environment. That is very, very hard to do because it takes so much care to do that. And like you've just mentioned as well, a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't care for the auditionees who come and want to get a job. You know, in a lot of people's minds, I've been in auditions multiple times in my life and I want to get the job. So it's very natural that if we don't get the job, it can somewhat be perceived as a failure, let's say. However, I have not been in many environments where I've had to gain as well, right? Like, although I had to learn all these phrases and work and really show, like, it wasn't that often that I go, wow, that was such a mutually beneficial relationship. Like, I was taken care of despite not getting the job. So I do hope that that is a development in the future, you know, for us, all of us really in the arts. But a controversial take for you is, I've seen many people as well, especially in the dance scene, you know, you take 1, 2, 3 looks at this particular dancer and they're so untrained, right? Did not have many classes throughout the person's life. And because of the genius of the creator, he or she has been able to tap into such vast potential to show other things, you know, the sensibility, the human, this performer, this beauty. But then for me, sometimes it goes way overboard. And especially in an art form like dance, we still like to see the aesthetic, the beauty of the line, the body, and the extremities that the body can achieve. And I come across so many pieces where this person just fumbles around the ground, rolls and smokes a cigarette and reads a newspaper, shrugs a little bit, and everyone's like, oh my God, it's the most amazing type of dance I've ever seen. We should not hire any skilled dancers anymore. Let's go for these types of people who are not even dancers, you know, who just happen to take a class or two and has this really weird aspect to them, this non-dance quality that has become fetishized over the years as being better or much more aesthetically pleasing than really skilled dancers. What is your take on that?
Many people are trapped in the perspective you describe, the so-called aesthetic of dance. To me, it doesn't work for me. Dance is just a word, a poetic word. But we have to be very careful. Just like I work with a lot of seasoned dancers. They realize they all get hurt. They are so painful. And they still try to convey what they did 20 years ago. You know, when the body doesn't work that way anymore. I said, how high can you kick? You know, you're not acrobat. You know, I don't come to theater to watch how good your skill is. How you investigate, how you write your poems through your body, right? But that sensitivity, sometimes it calls for very specific skill, yes, but not all the time, I think. So I think we have to learn to construct, you know, the aesthetic platform to allow the audience to merge into that kind of logic, to invite them, but not presenting, hey, this is what dance should be. It's almost like, well, just like when you kept saying, it's a job, right? To me, it's never a job.
Yeah.
Once people think that's a job, then we have problems. To me, art is only a platform. I wouldn't say I'm a job provider. Even though I does get some kind of funding, you know, and it's great that we could earn some money, you know, through the productions. But if we keep thinking that way, we would never be able to get back to the fundamental questions of why art in the first place, right? And that art is, it comes out of necessity to reconnect with certain specific questions that we care for. So to me, you know, when I work with people, you know, I often mixed with people like singers, actors, dancers, or even stagehands. They didn't realize they could provide the performance different kind of perspectives, as if to open up a world like everyday life. Those things are presence. But we tend to idealize how things could be or should be. And that could be very narrow-minded in a way if we are not being careful. I'm not saying trying to get the kind of aesthetic skill is nonsense. No, that's only part of the possibility. But it is not the standard. How we achieve the kind of standard depend on the choreographer, the dancer, or even the creative artist, you know. We always have to go back to the fundamental question. How would you invite the audience to connect with the issues that you truly feel concerned with?
Lovely. I like that. I love that. So thanks for mentioning inviting the audience. I believe as a performing artist, that is essential, right? Creating a real relationship through your art, through your platform to engage with the outer world. So let's talk a little bit about some of your projects. And two that I want to emphasize on is firstly the 100 Stories project that you've been doing for quite some time now. And then the other one is Art in Action. So let's talk about firstly 100 Stories. So I know everybody has a story. However, because you already mentioned audience, right? Is there a story, are there types of stories that you would choose or that you would portray in a way that makes an audience more fascinated by or engage with even more than just anyone's story at all? Because I think everyone has a story. However, stories do also need to be processed. Can I say that? Rewritten. Yeah.
Well, we are all storytellers and we all enjoy listening to stories in everyday life, right? One of the reasons that drove me to work on this particular project to interview 100 mothers, you know, through drawing and telling at the same time. So the interview is not just telling who they are, what they are. I provide them four particular frameworks. Through those frameworks, we get the chance to understand the cultural differences, the layers of personalities. They try to construct through the eyes of others and through the eyes of the self. Okay. So the four frameworks would be, one is the experience of the body. It's a subject matter that a lot of the Chinese people would try to stay away from. They find very embarrassed, you know, to talk about the body as if it's a taboo, you know, it's some kind of taboo, you know. I mean, in social media, you know, they are all being influenced by the advertising, you know, the so-called the image, how they look. But to me, it's something far beyond that. Once we're born, we all have to live with bodily self. It takes on so much experiences, you know, in connecting with the other. In the course of life, you know, those experiences are very, very important. And that's one framework. The second framework is we try to recall the place we live in, the environment, the objects, the intake of those objects, space that we used to when we were young. As if they are important clues, you know, to understand, you know, the characters we tend to draw on, you know, from past experiences without knowing so, because we grew up with a family that we didn't even choose to be with, right? We didn't have a chance to choose the family, right? It's just likewise, you know, when we are young, we got stuck with a place. But what happened, you know, to this bodily self when we stuck with that particular environment? The third framework would be the family tree. Do we connect with our grandparents anymore? What about the grandparents of our grandparents? It totally disconnected now, right? We rarely put ourselves into from a distance to look at life that way. Just like mothers, you know, they have to connect with who they are through their mothers, what their mother told them. And then all of a sudden they take on the role as a mother. And how they... It's just like one of the mother kept telling me that the nurse in a hospital, you know, often say, "Don't you know how to be a mother? Only the child was being born only just less than an hour. Of course not.
Yeah.
Right. But what's the problem? There's no problem. But in our society, somehow we never have that kind of room and space." There is not a university course called A Mother, Learning to Be a Mother, a kind of course, right?
Maybe there will be in the future.
I don't know. You know, that would be scary too, you know? So the final framework would be how they conceive the future self to be. You know, I mean, through reflecting from the past. So it's from these four frameworks, you know, I contemplate with the mothers. And it was fascinating watching them how to draw. Well, a lot of them, you know, would say, you know, "I don't know how to draw." I said, I don't expect you knowing the skill of drawing. I just be a child, giving yourself the opportunity to play with a pencil, you know, to play with a pen, you know, and draw on. And I even suggest if they don't draw, they just put on circle. That's fine. Just keep putting circles on. And miracles happen. Yeah. I mean, through the telling of tales, a lot of things, you know, couldn't be explicitly expressed. You can read through the drawings. So the reason why I want to draw on this kind of project is when a lot of artists are being trained to tell stories, yet they don't have the skill to listen to stories, to observe. So the researchers... That is the artists themselves, you know, when they watch the mother, all of a sudden sharing with them their own story in 3 hours. Most of the comments that they found it fascinating. It's better than a stage play. Stage play, you know. Mm. It's that because it's all heightened. That person being there all of a sudden have to come to terms with who they are, what they are. Isn't that what all artists, you know, should have at least the kind of reflective power from, you know, themselves, right? If they want to be good. So for me, you know, rigging this kind of a project is almost like rebuilding a platform that the APA didn't work on for artist training, you know.
Yeah,
just like when you're a dancer, right? You just try to present something to others, right? But what are you presenting? Yeah. You don't even have the mind or care, you know, observing the other.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of my favorite types of podcast shows, although I know podcasting has been built as a platform for knowledge consuming and producing. My favorite shows are the storytelling ones, and that's something I also enjoy most about in all of my episodes and my shows, is to be able to derive the stories of my guests and their networks, their experiences, you know, and hopefully one day I will also be learning how to reframe the show to go in that way, because I think I enjoy it also mostly from that perspective, to be able to tell people's stories, because those are the things that really fascinate me the most. And I think the project in its entirety, the title is like as flower, as water, as mother, right? And we talk about also aesthetic a lot, you know, flowers, nature, water, the liquidation, this, you know, amorphous quality, just a lot. And then it's completed in the image of a mother. And my mother is my biggest hero. So, you know, that really speaks a lot as to why I think this project is so fascinating for me. And I really like, you know, already reading through some of it. Let's talk about the second project now. And that's also something I'm really interested to know a little bit about, because I asked you about this before. So can you also share a little bit about what Art in Action is?
Well, it's an attitude to what art should be, could be. I think it's just a platform. When you try to put on any kind of art making, you're putting yourself into research in action. It's through the act of something that you begin to contemplate, to understand, to connect. Then you begin to see something beyond the ordinaries. I mean, an artist is almost like a scientist. We need some kind of hypothesis, right? We build from experimentation. We contemplate through plays, games. Because through art, all of a sudden, you know, you can reconfigure the rules, new rules or no rules. And then you have to work alongside with that kind of grid. You begin to learn to define, you know, the kind of action through particular viewfinder. In daily life, you know, we rarely put on that kind of framework to look into ourselves and look through others. We moralize vaguely through a word, through a sentence, like the social media, you know, how painful it is to keep watching those so-called comments as if they don't hold any kind of responsibility whatsoever for what they say. But art in action is almost like you have to first see the grid. But within the grid or outside the grid, there are still alternative grids interweaving with one another in the course of action. It's almost like in a Chinese word called si xiao, right? Si is almost like, where is your heart? Looking into that field, right? Within the field, there are so many invisible fields, right? It's almost like a matrix, right? So through the art in action, you begin to see the line, the intercoursing from one field to another, as if you can pull your lenses away from the focus, the focal point, and then or maybe dive into the heart of that particular objects and observe from within. We would begin to realize the limitation, how ignorant we all could be. And there are tremendous part of ignorance in all of us, everyone, be you famous or not. But yeah. But sometimes right now we all turn into consumers. Just like when you say audience, I think I never rehearse a piece of work for the sake of an audience. I think first I have to be very honest with who I am and share with them the grit, right? And then invite them to join us so they could share their feelings and idea so that we could grow together as a community. That's what an audience should be. An audience is a collective of individuals. They are They could be so creative, just like when we go to cinema, what we enjoy is the darkness, right? Nobody cares what you're thinking, right? While you're watching the stories, actually, you fly in and out of the stories, of the characters, of the actions. You contemplate with the self. And that's what theater audiences do, you know? So when we try to avoid thinking audience as a single word, a single form of weirdos. Yeah, they pay the ticket, they come. But if we don't think that way, they don't pay to consume. They pay because they respect the time these people contribute to specific searching. They pay to buy the specific opportunity for a special journey they could ride on. So I think we have to learn to unveil those absurd discourse when we're talking about audience.
Yeah.
Likewise, story.
Yeah.
So stories is what in stored, right? In Chinese word, chong zhok tong chong sheng, that chong. That means you try to use a key to open up a store and see what you have stored in, right? So you could be creative and it could be painful too.
What are the similarities between tailoring, technology, and talking? Well, they do all start with a letter T, obviously, but that's not really my point. How about this? Tailoring requires technology. Technology requires talking. And talking about both tailoring and technology is pretty fun. Well, at least to me. But for you, there's only one way to find out. If you're interested to learn more about certain technologies that are coming up, as well as the inside out of the tailoring industry, hop on over to Tailoring Talk with Roberto Revilla on anywhere you get your podcasts. Tailoring Talk interweaves the fabrics between technology, tailoring, and what it feels like to have a wonderful conversation with a friend. And when you're over there, tell him that Jason sent you. I'm pretty sure he would really appreciate it. Now let's get back to the show. I think this you've definitely heard of many, many times is that the audience often completes the work. Yeah, without the audience, you can just sing and dance in the bathroom. It's
That's right.
Completely fine.
That's right.
Yeah, that's your art. That's up to you. Yeah, but the audience completes the work. And also this is an analogy that I often apply a lot to my life is that, you know, I look at teachers a lot. Yeah, I look at educators, so-called educators, let's say. And a lot of them are very focused on delivering content, delivering material, and shaping an individual to become contributing members of a society. However, if I were to be a student all over again with this a bit more wisdom in my life, you know, I would choose courses that not only teaches me, I think teaching is definitely an important aspect of it, but inspires me. I want to be inspired. I want to have my, I want to be heard. I want my voice to be heard. I want, even as an audience while watching or consuming something, I want to be heard. I want to feel like I can resonate. And those are the shows that I go and I pay for. Those are the ones that I want to invest my time and space in. The ones that I can feel like I'm part of that journey. Make me part of that journey because I want to be part of that journey. That's why I'm there with you on a Saturday, Friday, night or matinee show. Doesn't matter. I will do that if you allow me the chance to be part of your life, right? That's what creates this kind of connection, I think. That's very important. And I really enjoy being an audience, much more so than being a creator on many occasions, because I think for me, like, you know, the next step of my journey is to become much more like an entrepreneur, much more like, you know, that area of development. I stopped creating in a sense, in the artistic sense. I'm creating podcasts episode right now, but that's basically it. But, you know, I've stopped being a choreographer. Instead, I wanted to be more of an audience. I wanted to watch people more. I wanted to learn in that sense more, because I think I was not so much of an audience when I was, you know, being educated, you know, as a dancer. You know, I was taught to produce more than I could watch. So I've taken that transition hopefully into my next chapter of life, which I think has really benefited me a lot more now, to be able to listen more than speak, because your time will come. You know, it's much better to sit and settle first. Yeah. So as we slowly wrap things up, I have a couple of bonus questions for you that are, once again, a little bit more personal, so not so work-related or art-related. Can you help us maybe name or share one of your proudest moments so far in your artistic career? The one moment that you could pull out from the many memories that you have that you go, wow, this is a moment that will live long in my own
honestly
memory.
I don't have any. But they are all important moments because things accumulate. Mm-hmm. You know, it adds up. If I focus on just one particular moment, that could be dangerous and scary. As if, you know, I can be better. You know, it's yet to come. Mm. Right? There's something I would look forward to. So it's almost like all the parts, you know, would be added up and shaping who I am, what I am now. All the failures, all the sadness, all the proud moments, like you said. Because it's so dangerous when we look only at those proud moments. We tend to forget or exclude the other. And that's not the totality in being. So I'm a strong believer in the totality of self in the making. As if we have to embrace all those little moments and value them. And they could be the proudest of all, is by giving that space, allowing yourself to taste, to zip in, to feel through all those happenings, all those events. They are there for specific reasons, be you like it or not.
Wonderful. All right. So one last question for you. This is going to be a hard one. So once again, full freedom as to how you would like to take this. I know we've talked a lot about not defining anything. And I believe, for example, dance is the universal language, movement, basically. It's something that nobody needs to learn how to do. We've done it since we were born. Breathing is already movement. And just in my own interpretation, like if you can, you know, the world exists, right? There's this very famous quote, like, the universe exists because we make sense of it. You know, we think it, we perceive it, we feel it, we are aware of it, you know, and likewise movement. If it is somewhat in that level, then I believe that can already be considered a part of dance. Like, if you are sensitive of it, if you are aware of your movements in any way, shape or form, you can then repurpose that into some kind of dance, some kind of performance. So what do you think makes a dancer?
You know, when you say a dancer, everybody's a dancer. Everybody is an actor, a performer. When we try to take away the framework of wordplay, we could be much freer. I just treat that person as he is or she is. As is something so fundamental. It's something that we have to learn to embrace in daily living. Because once we try to define that word, I'm not trying to avoid providing you the answers. You might be, you know, trying to get me, you know, get something out of my mouth. But I'm just not that kind of person who could be good at, you know, giving you a definition. That's why I'm lousy with examinations. You know, that's why I chose theater in a way, because I don't have to go by with any specific rules or regulations. I learned to define the grid and make hypotheses. And then I would see why Butoh, you know, you heard of Butoh in Japan, right?
Yeah, Butoh, for sure, yeah.
I mean, those kind of artists, even though they could still dance in the 90s. You know, they don't think about dance. They just think about the sense of being in specific place and time. and a state of being therein. If we could be honest and contemplate, you know, that particular state of being, I think dance begin already.
Wow. Thank you so much, Hoeng Phung, for your imagination, for your adventurous mind, for your humility in the art. That's something that I truly appreciate. I thank you for that. I thank you for sharing all of this to us. Thank you so, so much. Really, really appreciate this.
No, you're welcome. You're most welcome.
Ho Ying Fung has been my guest today. He is a theatre director, playwright, designer, producer, and most of all, the founder and director of Ho Bit Goon, a cultural hub for art and body and mind centering. What are your favorite moments from today's interview? And what are your thoughts as well of the crossover between dance and theatre? Feel free to share and let me know either through the website at backgrounddancer.com or even at Instagram at background_dancer. Don't forget to check out our newest YouTube channel, The Background Dancer, which you can find little bite-sized content and highlights from all previous episodes leading up to this very one. This episode, of course, concludes the month of interdisciplinarity, which has been quite interesting, to say the least. And coming up in 2 weeks' time, we head into the month of choreography, which promises also many, many more fascinating points. So stay tuned for that. Once again, thank you so much for your time. Stay safe, stay healthy, and I'll see you very, very soon in the next one. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode. Be sure to subscribe, comment, and leave a review on your designated podcast and social media platforms. If you found this interesting or helpful, feel free to share with members of your community so that they too may connect with us in our quest to foreground dance in the background. I am Jason Yap of The Background Dancer, and as always, catch you next time. Calling all dance educators and leaders, whether it's through a professional development weekend, day or workshop, Lauren Ritchie is passionate about connecting with fellow educators who are in the trenches, pouring their hearts into their work with unwavering dedication. From navigating stress and perfectionism to fostering confidence and resilience in dancers, Lauren provides invaluable guidance on supporting students through every step of their journey. Because, let's face it, our work changes lives, and it's most impactful when teachers embrace, communicate, and practice mental skills themselves. Join her online teacher workshops and education sessions, where you explore topics like understanding the brain stages of your students, enhancing motivation, effective feedback strategies, preparing for competition, and fostering team cohesion. Ready to transform your teaching approach and empower your students like never before? Reach out today to learn more at www.withlauren.ca/teacher-workshops or click the link in the show notes below.